couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Candyman, Vacation Friends, The Colony, He's All That, and The Witcher, Nightmare of the Wolf. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring the original Candyman sequels. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
This week, the news was about the box office being Free Guy having such a great week. And it did. I don't want to take anything away from the success of Free Guy. It is a bona fide hit. It only dropped 35% from the previous weekend, making $18.5 million in its second weekend. Well, that's a great drop, by the way. Anything less than 50% is really a good drop. And that's great. That's wonderful. I think that gives to the success of the movie, and that's, but let's not overstate it. I mean, I'm literally seeing think pieces where people are saying theaters are back completely because this one movie in this desert of marginally successful films did pretty well. You know, Free Guy was $125 million to make. Yeah, it's going to probably leg it out to over $100 million, but still, that's, That is not a runaway hit. That is not quadrupling its original budget. I mean, it's good for this movie in this pandemic era, but it's also not the greatest thing in the world. Also, you can't talk about how great this is as a theatrical exclusive and then to paint every theatrical exclusive that way, while at the same time, two of the other new releases were theatrical exclusives and completely flopped. Both The Night House and The Protégé made about the same amount of money, less than $3 million, came in like 7th and 8th, did not do well, and those were theatrical exclusives. And then Reminiscence made even less than that because that was also available on HBO Max. But the numbers came out from that as well and found out that very similar to In the Heights, the numbers of people watching it on HBO Max were about what you'd expect given the poor box office it had. So again, the Warner Brothers model of HBO Max day and date is not really drawing that much away from the box office in the theaters. And whatever it does draw away, I think is more than made up for with people continuing their HBO Max account so they can get these day and date releases. So I am that one person out there who says, look, the day and date releases actually have a certain playability to them. And it doesn't seem to be overly negatively impacting the box office. What you'll see is movies not doing well in general, and it's reflected on both platforms. Also, no one seems to talk about the fact that Paw Patrol, the movie, made $13 million, which is fantastic in the pandemic era with a kids movie, and that was also available as a hybrid on Paramount Plus. So how can that be showing that theaters are back if that hybrid model works for Paw Patrol? It just, the point is people will go see the movies they're going to go see. I think there's also something to be said about movies that people aren't going to race out to the theaters for. I think The Night House is one that's going to get some life on video and it's going to be remembered well. But for the people who liked Paranormal Activity and found footage movies, it just may not be that big of a hit. Another piece of news is just sort of this little blip in terms of shifting schedules. Venom, Let There Be Carnage, may or may not move. That's about as definitive as I can get. There was a report earlier this week that that thing's going to move out of October. And there was another report that came out and said, no, it's staying in its place. You got to remember, Hotel Transylvania already got sold to Amazon. It's going to appear there and not go up against the Addams Family at the beginning. I think the bellwether is going to be Shang-Chi. And how well that does as a theatrical exclusive. And if that thing does not do well, or if there's a certain number that Sony has in mind, and if they see Shang-Chi does not do that, they're going to move Venom. Because Venom, they need to have that. And Sony doesn't have an exclusive partner in place. They don't have a Disney Plus, or a Paramount Plus, or even a Peacock. Which goes on to point out something like No Time to Die, which is also barreling down in October. What's going to happen to that one? Because MGM does not have a specific streaming platform that's built. It needs to make a ton of money. Maybe it's not that we can't release No Time to Die. It's just maybe we should stop making movies that cost $300 million. Or figure out a way to get some sort of production partner. Who knows? I mean, if they get spooked by Shang-Chi, if it doesn't do well, God knows what happened. I mean, because honestly, if No Time to Die comes out and it makes $70 million total, even if it just matches the $180 million that Black Widow did, that's a flop for that movie because it costs so much to make. And speaking of Black Widow, there's a couple interesting things about Black Widow in the news. We now know how much Black Widow made on Disney Plus because thanks to a filing in regards to this Scarlett Johansson lawsuit, Disney pointed out that they had $125 million in rentals for that. $125 million, that's a lot more than that over $60 million that we heard about that first week. And that tells us two things. First of all, it puts its total first-run gross at over $300 million, which is fantastic for pandemic era. And it's on par with a Marvel movie. That's not even calculating the fact that Disney keeps more of that $125 million than if that was just added to the box office. But it also tells us that not everybody rented it the first week, because it doubled that more than $60 million figure Disney gave after that first weekend. And if it's in line with everything else, whatever it makes that first weekend, maybe you double it. That's about what it makes its whole run. So this process is actually seeming to play out for Disney, and that's why they called Shang-Chi an experiment to see what happens if they just put it exclusively in the theaters. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The big one this week that everybody's talking about is Spider-Man No Way Home. That trailer dropped this week, and it drops in theaters on December 17th.
When Mysterio revealed my identity, my entire life got screwed up. I was wondering if maybe you could make it so that he never did.
Strange.
Don't cast that spell. It's too dangerous.
We tampered with the stability of space-time. The multiverse is a concept about which we know frighteningly little. Be careful what you wish for, Parker.
We already know this is going to be dealing with the multiverse. Casting announcement and that has already leaked a lot of what's going to be going on in this movie. But I felt that the trailer was relatively restrained. I felt that the trailer didn't give away too much, which is good. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'm not going to watch any more trailers. My God, this thing's only coming out in about 4 months. So yeah, I don't want to see anything more. The next time I see the Spider-Man stuff, I want to be sitting either in a theater or at home on an exclusive streaming link. But I think this is going to be a really neat movie, and it's going to be one of those things where at the end you're probably going to be like, doggone it, that Spider-Man's going to be out of the Marvel Universe because Sony's struggling with content control with Marvel. The next one I want to talk about is Welcome to the Blumhouse, which airs on Amazon Prime starting October 1st.
Are you feeling lucky?
The locals think it's a curse.
I need to get out of this place.
Whatever I've seen at night, it's real.
When you experience something disorienting, close your eyes.
I think we use a wooden stake.
What? Blumhouse did this last year. They had four exclusively new movies, more independent-sized horror movies. And horror movies work great on a low budget. That's one of the few movies that really, really work well on a low budget if you do it right. They were less straight up horror movies and a little bit, a couple of them were more thrillers, but this one looks like they're leaning more into the horror elements, you know, vampires and werewolves and that sort of thing. And they're dropping two of them on October 1st and two of them on October 8th. I can't wait to see these because it's October. It's going to be horror movie time and it'll be coming right to my home. So that'll be fun. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Colony and The Witcher, Nightmare of the Wolf.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can, spins a web any size.
Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about The Colony. This is available in theaters and VOD. And traditional VOD still exists, which basically means anywhere you can rent a movie, whether it's iTunes or Vudu or YouTube or Amazon Prime. You can go. Well, you can just go to Amazon. Even you don't have to have a Prime account, and you can rent stuff on demand. The Colony is one of those movies that's available on VOD. It doesn't have its own exclusive streaming service that you got to sign up for. It's an IFC movie, which is the Independent Film Channel, but the IFC does not have its own, at least that I know of, they don't have their own streaming service, but it's also in limited release in theaters if you've got a neighborhood theater that shows independent films. But in The Colony, after astronauts colonize another world, they send back a scout team to Earth to see if they can inhabit the planet again.
Where I'm from, all reproductive technology efforts failed for both men and women. They want to prove that we can procreate here. On Earth.
You came to Earth on the first mission.
We waited so long. It's imperative that we give future generations the chance of civilization and bring our people home. For the many.
For the many.
I'm a huge fan of science fiction, and I love sort of the out-of-the-box science fiction. I mean, I love modern mainstream science fiction. You know, Star Wars, Marvel movies, superhero stuff. I love that. So, I mean, I'm a big science fiction fan. I like big and little. I like small stuff, too. I like the small science fiction films that you had to go to the art house theater to see. Now you can get them on VOD. Actually, the stuff like from IFC is way more accessible to the average person now because you can get it on VOD. It's been on VOD. And nobody, no theater's complaining that The Colony's in theaters and VOD at the same time. They only complain when it's a big, huge moneymaker like a Marvel film. But I've always appreciated independent science fiction movies. It's a challenge. Horror movies are a little easier to contain. You can do sort of that one location cabin in the woods and with a very limited cast. But if you ever do science fiction, a lot of times you got to deal with effects and even just models and set design. You're dealing with some things that are a little more challenging. And The Colony achieves this to a degree. It's an interesting idea with the whole thing being that they're returning to Earth and they find the Earth. Well, where they land on Earth is pretty much, it's flooded by about a foot and a half. Basically being, you know, the Earth's warmed up enough that a lot of the world has been flooded. They only end up in this one very limited place, so I have no idea what happens 30 miles from where they are. But it's dark and it's grim and it's very gray. And my biggest complaint isn't even about the story. I mean, the story's interesting because it's this woman trying to figure out if she can plug back into society. There's, as you heard through the trailer, there's a certain degree of fertility issues that they're dealing with, and they find people have been breeding naturally on the planet, even though at the colony they aren't. And, you know, this is seen as a secret that might be able to help them. But of course, it's also dealing with the people who are left behind fighting these weird sort of tribal groups that have evolved. In essence, it's your typical post-apocalyptic movie. And you used to get a ton of these, especially in the 80s and particularly in the 90s. And they are all based on the Road Warrior. And that's why in the 90s, anytime you had a smaller budget post-apocalyptic movie, it always took place in the Red Desert. You know, it was sand and dusty and in the rocks. And the reason for that is you could either shoot it in another country, and there's deserts all over the world, or you just shoot it in California, because there's plenty of desert out there as well. It's a cheap production thing. Well, now what they do is they shoot it, and there's more stuff with it. We talked about how Reminiscence last week had a bit of the flooding of the coastal areas. So that's turned into more of a motif now. You know, artists trying to address climate change, at least in the background of the movies. But what you see now is you see a very generic grayness to science fiction. Everything's gray. And in this one, part of it's because it's all cloudy and misty. There's no color in this movie at all. It's all shades of gray. It's dirty and it's dingy. And to me, this is just another version of everybody out in the desert. Only back then it was just browns and reds and dirt. And this one, it's grays and darks and whites and grime. And so I find that to be a little bit pedantic. I find that to be not terribly original. I mean, the production design fits well with that, but a part of it is you have to make a movie visually interesting. And if you're going to make a movie that's very dark or very gray or very dingy, you still have to make it visually interesting. And that's where I think this one fails. So I'm going to have to say The Colony. Right now, I'm going to say The Colony kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Witcher, Nightmare of the Wolf. This prequel to The Witcher follows the early career of one of the other Witchers and his attempt to rid the countryside of monsters.
Do you know what's involved in making a Witcher?
They're going to poison us. They'll kill us, then bring us back, but we won't be normal.
I get scared too. Then I think, soon I'll be stronger than most anyone, wanting for nothing. I'll never be scared again.
See, I'm a monster hunter, Phil. Favors and friends don't pay bills.
Kill whatever is murdering our people in the woods outside our turret.
I have no intention of playing guide to you, witch.
I was not a fan of The Witcher, and while I liked the world it was building, and while I thought Henry Cavill did a fine job in it, I found it kind of hard to follow and a bit confusing. And part of it is because The Witcher apparently tells three consecutive stories with the same guy looking exactly the same no matter what era he's in, even though they're like 30 years apart. And I went back and I looked at, I might brush up and watch the rest of The Witcher, but I was never a fan. I thought it was a little convoluted and I didn't find a great love for the world it built. And that carries over into this. Now, this is an anime version of the movie and it's done through a South Korean company, but it's done in an anime style and in so it's very, very violent. I mean, from the beginning, like the opening scene is very, very violent. And it's the kind of thing that, you know, there's a lot of people who think, oh, it's animated. Let's watch it and show kids. Well, just because it's animated, especially if it shows up on Netflix, just because it's done with animation does not mean that kids are going to be good for this. Some of that stuff is extremely violent and disturbing, as The Witcher is. So as a grown-up, as an adult-level type of movie, they don't pull punches on this. And it's one of the characters, it's one of Henry Cavill's, the character in Witcher, it's like his friend, like his mentor. It's his story about him growing up and becoming a Witcher. I wasn't a huge fan of this, but that's partly because I'm not a huge fan of The Witcher. I think it's well done. I think it looks better, actually. I think it's a more interesting look than the series itself, because I think the anime lends to it, because it's neat to see something with that anime style that's, of course, sort of Polish medieval, which I think is sort of where they're going for with The Witcher, because I think it's a Polish book series that this is based on. So yeah, I think it works. It's worth seeing, especially if you're a Witcher fan. I think it's one of those you should see if you're a Witcher fan. It's an interesting little one-off. It's short. It's an hour and a half. And it dropped on Netflix, I think, like last Monday. But like I said, I'm going to give it a kind of rocks. Even though I'm not a big fan of the series, I thought this was a neat installment in it and a nice way to branch out from the actual series before you get to season two coming in a little bit.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Candyman, and he's all that.
When I look out.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the big one that's in theaters, and that is Candyman. This reboot of the 1992 horror classic finds a struggling artist getting caught up in the history of a ghostly killer that appears if you say his name five times in the mirror.
I feel really connected to this neighborhood. Cabrini Green. It was the projects.
I just moved in around the corner.
The old candy factory.
I'm an artist.
You're looking for Candyman. He's the monster that's part of this neighborhood.
Why are you drawn to this?
I'm hoping to spread the story all about Candyman.
You should say his name.
Candyman.
Don't say that.
I remember almost 30 years ago, I worked in college in this little group called Campus Films, and we showed movies on campus. You know, we did classic films and recent releases. And we had a early screening of Candyman. I remember enjoying it for what it was, but I didn't really appreciate Candyman until I saw it just a few years ago. I showed it to my kids. I know, that's they were old enough to take it, I think. And then, of course, Shout Factory released a Blu-ray special edition or a collector's edition of it. And I covered that a couple years ago on the show. And this new one, we've been waiting for over a year because this was supposed to come out last year sometime. We finally got this one out in theaters, and I think it ignores the other two sequels, Farewell to the Flesh and Day of the Dead. And the big difference with this movie is it takes it from the black perspective. And the reason that's important is because black people are very important to the telling of this story. In the original film, which is based on a Clive Barker short story, by the way, just so you know, Candyman isn't a real myth. It's similar to the Bloody Mary urban myth, but this was created by Clive Barker. But it's kind of become a bit of, it's gained traction, especially in the black community, as a bit of a folklore. And there's a lot of people who don't want to look in a mirror and say Candyman five times. The reason it's important it's told from the black perspective is because it's very ingrained into the story. The character of Candyman was a black painter back in the 1800s who was killed by people when he had an affair with a nobleman's daughter, and they cut off his hand and they put a hook on there. They covered him with honey. Forget the fact that honey doesn't attract bees, but, you know, and then he got stung to death. And so you have these motifs of a hook and bees and honey and sweetness, but blood at the same time. Those are all in the film, but the first Candyman and arguably the other two sequels were basically about a pretty blonde white girl who studies it and enters in and learns about the culture, but she's not part of the black culture. And it's nice to kind of put the epicenter of this movie actually taking place in modern day black culture. That allows, of course, with, you know, Jordan Peele's influence, I'm sure, and of course, Nia DaCosta is, of course, on top of all this, gives them a chance to address or have some allegories to certain social issues. Everything from the interaction between black people and the police to gentrification of, in particular, in Cabrini Green in Chicago, and the use of myth and the use of fear and the loss of family and grief. There's a lot buried in this movie. The movie has a lot to say, but it also still works as a chilling, creepy horror movie. It's self-aware, too. It knows what it's doing. There's a scene in there where the main character, he's a big, strong guy, and he's going through this abandoned apartment, and he hears a noise, and he's like, oh, no, and he, like, jumps. And he does such a, you know, jumping on the chair because there's a mouse kind of reaction. And that shows how utterly terrified he is, even though he's this big, strong, strapping guy. And that this actually does cause fear in people. And it has these homages to weirdly, Jeff Goldblum. There's two of them in there. There's one to him in Jurassic Park, one to him in The Fly. So there's an awareness of what this movie's doing and what its place in horror cinema, in monster movies, as well as body horror. It's very effectively well done. And it, like I said, it has a lot to say. And it's neat coming from that perspective. Also interesting to note, in none of the Candyman movies at all does a black person ever say Candyman five times in the mirror. They come close. A couple characters come close, but it's always some white person who's doing it. The horror movies are very, very popular in the black community, which is kind of a shame because there's so few of them made for them. You know, you get stuff like Tales from the Hood and that kind of stuff, and Bones with Snoop Dogg from the 90s. There was a push in the 90s to really embrace the black culture with horror movies. But a lot of times it's about some pretty blonde white girl doing something stupid and then other people getting killed. So this one is exceptionally well done. It is a very creepy movie that has a lot of subtext and absolutely delivers on what it promises. So I'm going to have to say Candyman totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the new film, He's All That. This gender-swapped remake of She's All That sees a popular influencer in high school agree to turn a reclusive ugly duckling into a hot teen item.
Breakups are hard. I was humiliated.
You're going viral in the wrong way.
It will get better.
Makeovers are my thing.
When I first met him, he was 120 pounds of bad hair.
Why don't you just make another Jordan?
I will create the next prom king.
You make it sound so easy.
You don't think I can do it?
No, but I do think it'll be fun watching you try.
A bet?
Oh.
I'm in.
Just so you don't make it too easy on yourself, we'll pick the guy.
Now, of course, everyone's like, this is based on She's All That. Well, it's also based on My Fair Lady, which is based on Pygmalion. But the reason they say this is based on She's All That is because it's flip-flopping the story and telling it from that high school perspective. It also has Rachel Lee Cook in a role in this movie. And Matthew Lillard, who was also in the original She's All That movie, you know, 20 years ago, he plays the principal of the school. Now, this one stars Addison Rae, who herself is an influencer, and she's 20 years old. And it's directed by Mark Waters, who, I mean, he did like Mean Girls and he did Freaky Friday. I mean, he's done a bunch of decent movies. He's done some crap as well. Everybody has their own crap that they do. But I mean, he knows how his way around a teen comedy like this. But here's the crux of the problem. You know, why it tells a basic story, and the basic story's fine and it does it okay and the actors are fine. But here's my problem with it. It's about an influencer played by an influencer. And then, they have this cameo by somebody Kardashian, one of the Kardashian girls. Who cares? And she's like her mentor. And it's trying to give the simultaneous message that you shouldn't worry about being popular and having all those followers and likes. Just be yourself, and then you'll get your followers and like. And that is total BS. You don't get followers by being yourself. You get followers by giving people what they want. And that's what influencers know. And I find it insulting that a 20-year-old influencer is vicariously through a movie preaching to me about how I need to be myself. And she doesn't know anything. She's 20. She can't even drink legally, for crying out loud. She can't rent a car. Are you kidding me? She is completely naive to the way of the world. And so they lean into all the influencer stuff and the likes and the hearts and all that kind of stuff. And it reminds you of that movie Wreck-It Ralph, the second one, Ralph Wrecks the Internet, where it was all about him getting likes. And I hate seeing that in movies, especially ones that are supposed to be impressionable for kids, because the message is get the likes. Whatever you can do to get the trending and become viral and become loved by a bunch of people you've never met, that's garbage. That's a garbage message. And then on top of it, reminds me of, I went to school in the 80s, and I remember like music class where they go, well, we thought we'd give some edge to this, so we're going to rap it. And the rap turned into, my name is Kevin, and I'm here to say, I'm going to rap the music today. And that's basically what it sounded like. It's absolute crap. And they don't know what rap actually was. There's an artistry to it, and you're missing it completely. And you think you're being cool, but by thinking you're being cool and doing that, it makes it less cool. So, yeah, this movie, I guess it's okay if you like garbage. But I didn't, so I'm going to have to say He's All That sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Vacation Friends and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring the original Candyman sequels.
Melly Mel, and I'm here to say I was born on the 15th day of May, and I'm Mr. Ness, and I love myself.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Don't worry, I'm not going to rap anything in this segment. Generally, I am not necessarily good at pegging what's cool, especially for the younger generation. But I definitely have an idea of what's not cool when I see it. Anyways, let's talk about something that is kind of cool and talk about Vacation Friends. After having a great vacation with a couple they met at a resort, straight-laced Marcus and Emily tried to have a normal wedding that is thrown out of whack when their vacation friends unexpectedly show up.
What are you two doing here?
Oh my God!
Excuse me,
This is a private event.
Oh, it's cool. We know the bride and groom.
We met these two animals down in Mexico.
Why does the salt not taste salty?
Oh, because it's cocaine.
What? We actually brought it from home.
Okay, look, we just got a container. This only happened because you said see you later.
I said it without meaning it like any decent person would. And somehow he's charming my dad.
Now, what's interesting about this movie, it was originally meant to be a direct-to-streaming movie. I don't think this was ever meant to go to theaters. It was a streaming movie that they were making under 20th Century Fox. And under the Disney banner, they didn't know where to put it. I mean, they can't put it on Disney Plus because there's really no place for R-rated content. So they put it on Hulu. Now, overseas, they put it on, they got like the star section of Disney Plus, and that's where the, not adult content, but grown-up content, the R-rated content goes. And this is Disney trying to test the waters to find out where to put stuff like Die Hard and Alien and Predator and RoboCop, all that kind of stuff that they ended up owning in the library when they bought it from 20th Century Fox. So this is available on Hulu, and this is, I think, where a lot of this is going. I mean, this does not feel like just a crappy TV movie tossed out. It doesn't just feel like some crappy thing as what a made-for-Showtime movie was back in the early 90s. This feels like you could have seen it in the theaters. I mean, it's got John Cena and Lil Ray Howery headlining it. These are two names that are draws. So for everybody who's talking about how streaming's dead, theaters are all back, this is where the middling releases, I think, are going to go. The big ones, the big money makers, you're still going to see going to the theaters, but I think you're going to see more of this kind of stuff. But anyways, the setup for Vacation Friends is nothing new. We've seen this sort of thing before. We have these agents of chaos that come into somebody's life, and the people's life that they come into are very straight-laced. Nothing is supposed to be out of place, and they plan everything. And it's, you know, it's the Odd Couple. Going back to the Odd Couple play, the Neil Simon play, you had that mixture of two different types of personalities and the comedy that can ensue. It reminds you also of stuff like What About Bob or Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You know, yeah, I've always put two different types, you know, it's a buddy type movie, only in this one, it's the four of them, it's the two couples. And I have to say, it's nothing that we haven't seen before, and a lot of the jokes are low-hanging fruit. Don't get me wrong, it's not exactly working hard to be overly clever, but I really kind of liked it. Part of it's John Cena. I gotta admit, that guy knows comedy. And Lil Ray Howery is actually playing the straight man in this one, which is neat. I remember when they had a bunch of the movies with The Rock and Kevin Hart, and they did that one Central Intelligence, and they had The Rock playing the more crazy character and Kevin Hart playing the more reserved one. It's a nice little flip because you expect Lil Ray Howery to be the crazy one. But John Cena is, and he's good. And the ladies too, Meredith Hagner playing the crazy blonde out of control girlfriend and Yvonne Jorge playing the fiance of Lil Ray Howery. They do a good job kind of holding it all together. And yeah, it's like I said, low hanging fruit and stuff. But the difference with this one is, there is like a genuine friendship that shows up with these people. There's something like nice about this movie. For as much crazy stuff that happens in it, there's kind of a nice feel to it. It doesn't feel like these people are destroying somebody's life. They're just kind of hot messes themselves. And the straight-laced characters aren't mean to them. It's just they're protective of their little bubble of normalcy that's getting popped with them kind of all working together. And it's so easy to get nasty and unpleasant and mean-spirited in a movie like this, but they don't. And that's actually the thing that I like the most about it. Is it? I wouldn't say it's uplifting, but it's nice. It's not mean-spirited, and I think that's good. We need more non-mean-spirited movies in the world today. And I think this one works, so I'm about to say Vacation Friends kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today I'm going to be looking at the Candyman sequels, and we're going to start off with the first one, Candyman 2, Farewell to the Flesh. Taking place in New Orleans, a teacher digs up her family history to discover the personal connection to the mysterious Candyman killer.
Candyman, flesh and blood? I'm afraid not.
But he lives in the mirror.
You say his name 5 times, he's supposed to come.
That's how we get you.
You guys don't really believe that, do you? There's no such thing as a Candyman.
First three victims were John Doe's.
What if it's true? What if the Candyman does exist? What did you see that night? Ray's body was torn apart by something powerful.
This is available on Amazon Prime until the end of the month, so you don't have much time to watch it. It goes off the service, I think, on August 31st. But if you've got Amazon Prime, you can watch it free until then. If you want to watch the original Candyman, it's on Peacock. You got to watch it with ads. Well, the most interesting thing about this movie, it's directed by Bill Condon, who, of course, did movies like Dreamgirls. He also did the last two Twilight movies, so let's not heap too much praise on this guy. But this guy's an Oscar-nominated and Oscar-winning writer-director. I mean, he did Gods and Monsters. I think he won an Oscar for the screenplay for that. So this is still just a run-of-the-mill sequel. It's better than I remember it. And it did get a theatrical run back in, I think, 1995. It didn't do terribly well, but it was better than most theatrical sequels to a horror movie. Like, if you look at, like, the sequel to Highlander, that thing was awful, and then they just went downhill from there. But Candyman, Farewell to the Flesh, is okay. The biggest problem is, well, the main story is the revealing of this woman's past history and her connection to Candyman. It does tend to be a bit slow, I guess. There are several times where I'm like, what is the point of this movie in the first place? So this is a mediocre sequel. It's not great. I'm going to say it kind of sucks just because it really doesn't live up to the first one nearly as much as it needs to be considered good. But, you know, overall, if you're going to watch one of the sequels, this is the one to watch.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the third Candyman movie, and that was Candyman Day of the Dead, which came out in 1999. Switching locations to Los Angeles, the last descendant of Candyman faces the killer spirit as he attacks her friends.
They say he came back from the dead, his hand replaced by a bloody hook.
Believe.
They say he called his name 5 times into a mirror and he appears.
Candyman.
And when he comes, he'll be the last thing you ever see. Candyman.
Hate generates hate.
Candyman.
Evil breeds evil.
Candyman. Be my victim.
Candyman.
Candyman.
Who are you?
Your past, your present, your blood.
By the time I watch this one, which is available on Hulu, it stars Dawn DeErico, who's from Baywatch. She's gorgeous, by the way. I mean, she's very beautiful. But as I'm watching this movie, I realized, and I tweeted this out, I said there's 3 steps to a Candyman movie. The first is some pretty blonde white girl doesn't believe in Candyman. The pretty blonde white girl then says his name 5 times in the mirror. Step 3, Candyman kills everyone but the pretty blonde white girl. This is where sequels go to die. This is not a good movie. It is a mess of a film. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and it moves it out of the urban environment with the black history from the South, which is why I thought the movement in the sequel to New Orleans was at least relevant. But it takes it to Los Angeles, and then they say, well, let's do a different ethnic group and go after the Mexicans and do Day of the Dead. And so the sort of like all the racial stuff gets muddled and confusing in this one, and it doesn't make any sense. And again, once again, it's just about this pretty blonde white girl. And Dawn DeErico, I mean, she's gorgeous. She's absolutely beautiful to look at, and she's got a great body. But she is not a good actor. And this movie proves it. This is not good. It's disappointing even compared to the previous Candyman film, and that wasn't great. So I'm going to have to say Candyman Day of the Dead completely and totally sucks.
It sucks.
Also available this week on DVD and Blu-ray, you have The Conjuring 3, The Devil Made Me Do It, and Peter Rabbit 2, The Runaway, 2 sequels that came out this spring that are virtually the same thing. And then for the vintage titles, you've got Overboard, 2 Evil Eyes, Prince of the City, A Return to Salem's Lot, Moment by Moment, and the Oh God Collection. And that's it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.